right, thanks, Scott Shannon, and thanks to all of you for being with us. Happy Monday. It is happy. The Oscars, which I didn't even barely know was on, this thing tanked. 800-941-SHAWN, toll-free telephone number. Hope you'll call in today, be a part of this extravaganza. I mean, if you go back in 2014, over 40 million Americans watched the Oscars. You want to go back further? We'll have Joe Concha on the program later today. 1998, 50-plus million people watched the Oscars. 2014, not that long ago, 40 million people. Last year, 18.1 million. This year, 8.9. An unmitigated failure, an unmitigated disaster. Now, somebody had sent me this. Where did I see this? Somewhere. That the New York Times actually talked to one of the producers of the Oscars on the condition of anonymity and told the New York Times the data found when you can actually get breakdown minute-by-minute ratings. And their post-show analysis, ratings analysis, indicated that tons of people tuned out and tuned off their television when these celebrities, the elite in Hollywood, start lecturing their audience. They don't want to hear it. And they're turning out. And I'm telling this, you can see the same thing what's happening to athletics. This is where I don't think athletes have really thought through the impact to their lives, their futures, their careers. One of the things I know, because I've interviewed many professional athletes over the course of my life. I know a lot of kids or athletes in college and high school and how hard they all have to work. I mean, it is big. It's a full-time job to be a top-performing athlete. It just is. And that's everything from, you know, stretching and strength training and conditioning and stamina and all these other things on top of whatever the skill set you need for your specific sport. But you can see it happening with the NFL. Their ratings have been way down the last couple of years. You can see it. The NBA playoff numbers, I mean, Hannity, my little TV show, was beating it significantly. You can see it in late-night television. You know, people bring up all of these shows, Fallon and Colbert and Kimmel and Seth, whatever his name is, and that hates me, and their ratings suck. I mean, Seth Meyers gets less than a million viewers a night. Last year, we averaged over 4 million, set a record for any one year in cable news. Always post-presidential election year, you see a decline. But we're beating every one of those shows by like a million viewers on an average night. Because nobody wants to hear or be lectured to. And when it comes to athletics, this is where the MLB and the NBA, their ratings sucked. Their playoff ratings suck. And the NFL, they're missing out something here. If you want to look, why do we love sports and why are sports so good for communities? Because if you look at the people in the stands, you've got a diverse crowd. You have people of all backgrounds, all races, all creeds, religions. They're there for one reason, is they love their team. It's an opportunity for people to put aside the day-to-day stress that we all have and problems and politics and go to a ball game, have a beer or two, sometimes three, and eat a hot dog, have some popcorn, get cotton candy, whatever you get your kids, the junk they like, and you have a great day, and everyone's cheering for the same team. Then you add politics to this. This is what Colin Kaepernick, you know, didn't understand, or LeBron James clearly doesn't understand, is, okay, well, now people are viewing less. That means that rights fees are going to eventually go down. Because they're not going to be able to sustain the ad rates that are needed to get the rights to run these sporting events. And then it's going to be a ripple effect. And then when attendance goes down, well, then the net result of that is players, professionals, they're going to be paid less money because they're not going to have the money to pay these big salaries. By the way, that many of these athletes, I mean, the best of the best, deserve and have worked hard for, and we should all be happy for them. I mean, I like watching people that are at the top level of whatever their profession happens to be. I marvel at their gifts, their talent, and the work that I know went on behind the scenes for them to get that good. And I, you know, and the thing is if there is a cause or a passion of an athlete, they would have the goodwill of everybody in the stands and everybody at home. If you just go out and say, listen, the violence in Chicago, I live in, I care about this. I want to stop this. I want to offer kids alternatives to the failing public schools. And if they were to ask their fans to join with them, somebody, you know, like LeBron James, got over 50 million Twitter followers for crying out loud. I guarantee you his fans would unite instead of taking, you know, the divisive political rhetoric route that so many other people do. You know, and it's just sad that they don't seem to have any desire to do any of these things. And it's in our politics. People want, there are moments, even I, that, you know, I live, eat, breathe, sleep, my job, my work, it's my passion. I'd love to do this every day. I'm honored. I'm blessed. I'm appreciative that you give me this microphone every day and that camera every night. Because, frankly, these are troubled times for this country. I couldn't be any more concerned about the future than I am now, with a sense of urgency that just doesn't leave me. It's that real, what we're dealing with, you know, now the biggest power grab ever attempted by any major political party in the history of the country. Want to talk about policing and defunding and or dismantling the police? Okay, well, the 24 or so shot this weekend in Chicago, 4 dead. 7-year-old little girl, 18-year-old man expected to appear in court to face charges in the fatal shooting of 7-year-old Jocelyn Adams. Remember who that person was? Wasn't that high profile a case? Remember, she was the little girl that died in a hail of bullets fired into her family car while going through a McDonald's drive-thru in Chicago. First grader shot 6 times as she and her father were in a drive-thru at McDonald's. I mean, can you imagine, you know what it's like when you take your kids to McDonald's? Now, I don't know if Linda takes poor Liam. I don't know if he gets to go to McDonald's. Does he get to go to McDonald's? Or do you?
He does not go to McDonald's.
How could you not take? It's unfair. It's borderline madness. Every kid loves a Happy Meal.
I'm going to put a poll.
It makes them happy.
On Hannity.com. And you know what it's going to say?
I don't eat it much because I can't eat like I used to.
Oh, my God. You're so full of it. First of all, when you're on the road, you are the worst eater I have ever been around in my life.
Wait a minute. Key words here. When I'm on the road.
Sean, you put on enough calories on a book tour for an entire bus troop of acrobats. It's unbelievable.
What do you mean?
This is you in the place that you love, In-N-Out.
In-N-Out Burger.
This is you. I would like animal something.
Animal style. Yeah,
I want pastrami on my burger. What?
No,
it's not enough meat on the burger?
No, that's Crown. You're mixing it up with Crown Burger. That's in
I don't
Salt
know.
Lake City.
All I know is that there were fried everything. Fried French fries, fried Oreos, fried onions.
But they take onions. If you watch them at In-N-Out Burger, they actually have real potatoes and they slice them in front of you. Peel them, slice them.
Does that
them,
make them less fattening when they put it
fresh
in the oil?
I don't every
understand.
Day. And they're delicious. French fries are one of the coolest inventions God ever made.
Uh-huh.
You're supposed to disagree that God made French fries. But
first
no,
of all,
God made potatoes,
so.
And God made the oil to fry them in.
Listen, God made the human being who decided to put potatoes into French fries and make everybody gain 10
pounds.
I like
a Wendy's single with cheese, ketchup, pickles, onions. I like a quarter pounder with cheese, meal, French fry, large fry, and a Coke.
I'm telling you right now, the only thing my son eats and he loves is
Chick-fil-A. Double at well, go ahead.
No, he likes Chick-fil-A. That's it.
That's I like Joe. So do you allow him to go to Chick-fil-A?
I do. I like Chick-fil-A, and I see the way they prepare their food, and it seems to be a little bit more on the up than the other
places. Please do me a favor. If I ever get to babysit Liam, which you'd never, ever allow to happen.
First of all, stop laughing.
You live too far away. But if you ever
Your idea of babysitting is saying yes to everything. That's not babysitting.
You ask him, Liam, would you like to go to McDonald's and get a Happy Meal? You can get Chicken McNuggets or you can get a cheeseburger Happy Meal. Would you like that with French fries? And you can get apple juice with it if you want. And you get a toy.
Well, he's five. So, you know, everything is chicken and French fries right now. So, of course, he would say yes to that.
Okay. Then you're depriving your child of a normal childhood. That's normal.
No, because I make French fries here in the air fryer with no oil. Chicken McNuggets in the air fryer with no oil.
The air fryer. Thank God for air fryers.
Dude, that thing is amazing.
Yeah, you know what's more amazing? My Masterbuilt Butterball Turkey Fryer.
Again with the oil.
French fries in that.
I'm telling you, I'm putting a poll up on Hannity.com, and the audience will side with me.
You're going to lose this poll.
I'm not going to lose.
What's
you're going to lose.
What's the poll going to say? Is it okay to take your kid
it's
gonna to
say,
a Happy Meal?
It's going to say, is Sean Hannity right or wrong? Wrong.
So what do you mean? It's all in the wording of the question. Is it okay to take your child to McDonald's for a Happy Meal?
Okay.
Every once in a while. I'm not saying every day. Now, do you let your son eat pizza at least?
Once a week.
And let me guess, what do you put vegetables on it?
Oh, no, I would never do that to him. That's as bad as eating it with a fork. Who did that? De Blasio, Carey? I can't remember.
Regular good pizza?
Regular pizza.
Okay. Well, nice sadly, Italian this poor pizza. Girl got killed in Chicago. By the way, New York City. Now, remember, they defunded $1 billion out of the NYPD. 50 people shot, 46 incidents over a 7-day period ending this past Sunday. Can you believe that? 50 people shot, 46 separate incidents, 7-day period, 300% increase surge from the same week in 2020. And last year wasn't particularly a good year either. The city logged 11 shootings, 12 victims during the final full week of the month, more than a month into the city's COVID lockdown. And same as 2019, this weekend alone, nearly 24 shootings, and cops don't want to respond anymore. NYPD cops, in case you're interested, you can tie these two statistics together. More than 5,300 NYPD uniformed officers retired or put in their papers to leave in 2020, a 75% hike, spike from the year before, according to data there. The exodus amid the pandemic, the rioting, et cetera, the lack of support, cops getting dumped with water on their head, their vehicles being vandalized, getting bullhorns in their face, toy pigs thrown at their cars, and, you know, yeah, rocks and bottles and bricks and Molotov cocktails. I mean, why would you want to be a cop today? You shouldn't be a cop. You know, it's police kill at the Oscars and every other insane thing that was said. Although Tyler Perry's Oscar speech, he said not to hate the police. But what did the audience do? He says, no, they stopped clapping. I refuse to hate someone because they're Mexican, because they're African-American, white, LGBTQ. I refuse to hate someone because they're a police officer or because they're Asian-American. I would hope we refused to hate. After the guy mentioned the police, the applause that had begun as he was speaking, well, they just stopped clapping, faded away into silence. All right, 25 to the top of the hour. So we've been following this disaster. We'll actually give you a COVID update with Dr. George Farid and Dr. Brian Tyson. And you know, New York still has 600,000 kids that are not attending in-person, don't have in-person education. Florida had it going since August. Texas, Florida, all the Republican states that didn't adopt draconian shutdowns did so much better. And we're seeing this. The worst place is still Michigan. I mean, Michigan's an unmitigated disaster. New York, of course, obviously. New Jersey, California, Pennsylvania, New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania and not far behind the executive actions on nursing homes. They all did the same dumb thing, forcing nursing homes to take on these COVID-19 patients, and the death tolls reflects it. Then the cover-up in New York. Remember, very early on, as Witless Whitmer, you know, institutes these draconian shutdowns, remember her husband, you know, even though you weren't allowed to, you know, he's special. He's taking his little boat out, and I don't know what he's planning to do with that. Oh, I'm the governor's husband. Oh, good for you. And then we caught Governor Whitmer lying about taking a trip to Florida. She lied. She absolutely lied through a tear. No, I never went anywhere. No, I didn't go anywhere. Did nothing. Well, I would have been criticized, then gets caught and then lies about it when she gets caught. So we have a Democratic lawmaker, an elected Michigan Democrat, refusing to obey their own laws again, caught drunk driving, cursing out cops, resisting arrest, fighting with paramedics, trying to use his political connections to beat the rap. The state rep's name is Jewel Jones, crashed the vehicle, you know, allegedly assaulted first responders attempting to help the guy and a passenger, and is on camera now, dash cam video, demanding they call Governor Whitmer to bail him out. Listen.
No, I already told you that. I already asked your driver's license and your ID.
Take care of me. I'll give you my stuff. Take care of me. I got you. You're going to make sure you don't put off before I put on my.
You're not going anywhere right now.
You're going to take me with them, all right?
Listen to me. We're going to do this one step at a time. All right?
Okay. Can I get my phone first?
No. Right now, I want your ID and your driver's license. Okay?
I can't do that.
Don't tense up.
Stop resisting. But I'm telling you, if you do that, that's not gonna be good.
Stop.
It's not gonna be good for you. I'm telling you.
Stop.
I run your budget, bro. I'm chilling. I just want to talk to you. I won't move. I won't go nowhere. I just want to talk to you.
We got this one. Give me your right. Give me your left arm.
I just want to talk to you, bro.
We're going to. Give me your stop resisting.
Oh, let go of my arm.
Your left arm, you're going to get
taken. I don't like this. Cause
give us your left arm. Bro. Stop resisting.
Bro, I've been abused by the police so much because I'm black. When I call Gretchen, I need your IDs and bad numbers and everything. I told you already. Yep. I will sit here and give you all my if y'all let me shut up. That's all I said. I work with y'all. I don't give a. I work with the police. You're not fucking me, bro.
Yeah, call Gretchen. You can't make this up. I mean, but I feel bad for the cops. Now you can hear something in that call. Oh, I'm being harassed. Now we have this idiotic push not only to defund and dismantle, but now also to take away cities and towns from indemnifying police if, in fact, they get sued, meaning they can get sued personally and then have to, out of their own pocket, pay for their lawyers. It is mathematically impossible on a police officer's salary to be able to pay for lawyers to the extent they would need to, because what's going to happen is every criminal is going to figure out, I'll just sue the cop. Cops are going to have to hire lawyers. Cops are going to stop arresting anybody. They're not going to be able to do their job. That's how dumb this all gets. Anyway, and you want to know why I mentioned the Census Bureau, why all of these, this massive migration out of New York is happening, out of California, New Jersey, Illinois. It's happening because of idiotic policies, high taxation, burdensome regulation on businesses. It becomes impossible. New York's going to be a 15% state income tax, city tax state. So you pay 40% when Joe raises your taxes of every dollar you make, 40 cents out of every dollar, then 15 cents more to the state and city of New York. That's 55 cents. Highest property taxes in the country. That now you're up to 60 some odd cents. And all the other hidden taxes they have. It's just unbelievable. You know, it's even, by the way, it's interesting on a side note here, Democrats are admitting now that, yeah, Joe hid who he was during the campaign. Now, I've been saying this. Nobody's been listening to me. It's the squad. It's their Green New Deal Joe is pushing. It's Nancy Pelosi pushing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's house. She's the speaker. Pelosi's speaker in name only. And everyone's so deathly afraid of the squad and Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez. And she says, yeah, I'm giving Joe a real thumbs up here his first 100 days in office. They've exceeded my expectations and every expectation that progressives have had.
One thing that I will say is that I do think that Biden administration and President Biden has definitely exceeded expectations that progressives had. You know, I'll be frank. I think a lot of us expected a much more conservative administration.
Yeah. Congressman McCarthy said it's a bait and switch. You know, yeah, promises of unity and bipartisanship. That's all one big lie. House GOP spotlights how bad this defund the police target. You know, who's going to get hurt here? If Rudy Giuliani didn't start stop and frisk and didn't use the vast majority of NYPD resources targeting areas with the highest crime rates and empowering the police to do their job, there's no way you go from nearly 3,000 murders every year down to a few hundred. It took a lot of work, meaning a lot of lives were saved. Manchin is getting, I don't know, Joe Manchin, I thought he was about to cave on eliminating the legislative filibuster. He says, I'm not going to be a part of blowing up the Senate. That's not happening. Not going to do it. I hope he stays where he is. And, you know, it's just on every single solitary issue. Everyone's now racist. If you're against D.C. statehood, you're racist. If you support the far more inclusive Georgia voting law than the state of Delaware, where Joe has represented Delaware 1,000 years, and Joe never lifted a finger to one of the most restrictive states in the country, actually, is, as he says, I brag, my state's a slave state, he said. Okay, well, they don't have 17 days of early in-person voting in Delaware. Georgia does. They don't have drop boxes anywhere in Delaware. Georgia does. They have voter ID laws in Georgia and Delaware. How does he get to say this is Jim Crow 2.0? If you oppose that, if you oppose eliminating the legislative filibuster, you oppose packing the courts, if you oppose D.C. statehood, everything's racist now. And by the way, if you think that the $2 trillion COVID emergency relief, which was the blue state bailout down payment on new Green Deal in reality and truth, and the infrastructure bill, which was nothing but new Green Deal spent reckless spending. Now Joe's proposing another $1 trillion spending package. Now we're up to $6 trillion in new spending. Wow. You know, we'll just keep printing money. Let's see how that's going to work. You know, while apologizing to America abroad, doing nothing about, you know, Putin and his troops now raising the tensions with Ukraine and saber-rattling there, or China's territorial ambitions on full display in Hong Kong, Taiwan, and in the Pacific, building literally their own islands now. You know, new poll, Biden's 100-day approval vastly oversamples Democrats. You know, they have Joe at a 52% approval rating, which isn't all that good either, by the way. It's the third lowest 100-day approval rating for any president going back to Harry Truman. But to even get that, ABC and the Washington Post poll conducted landline and cellular telephones, which is not the way to do polling these days. Anyway, they break it down, 33% Democrat, 24% Republican. Okay, 33% Democrats, 24%. Of course you're going to get a higher approval rating. There was a Rasmussen report, which was pretty fascinating, that, yeah, vast majority say that Kamala Harris is not qualified to become the president of the United States. And they have an unfavorable impression of Harris. And 43% very unfavorable. Why does she laugh at these awkward moments? It's bizarre. Now Biden planning to double the capital gains taxes from 23% to 44%. That's going to destroy. I'm telling you, it's this is none of this is going to be good. These America last policies of Biden, it's not going to be good. You know, it's just these are going to be very hard times. Kamala Harris, we should have an assault weapons ban. OK, remember, she said as a candidate that she thought it could be done by executive action. AOC praising Joe. That's all you need to know. Chucky Todd is out there. Biden's approval rating is really, it's the new 60. Huh? Okay, 53% is the new 60. Yeah, okay. Fuzzy math. Anyway, but it's really the lowest approval of any modern-day president. One of the lowest. One disastrous Democratic welfare program, by the way, is causing a hiring crisis. McDonald's franchise in Florida is so desperate for workers, they started offering people $50 just to show up to do an interview. I wonder if they include a Happy Meal for Linda's child who's been deprived a Happy Meal in his life, this poor kid. Uncle Sean is going to get him a Happy Meal come hell or high water. I'm going to figure out how to make that happen. To mail it to him when you're out of town or something.
You're going to mail him a Happy Meal?
I don't know. I'm going to bribe Grandma.
Trust me.
I'm going to get Grandma. Grandma has to agree with me.
Nine times out of ten, my mother's on your side anyway.
That's correct. Because your mother's a very smart, wonderful woman.
Flattery gets you everywhere. She does agree with me.
You know, Grandma, yeah, Linda, you need to talk to her again. You know, she's not taking her happy CBD pills. She needs some.
Listen, I just got more of those. They're fantastic.
Yeah, okay, great. It relieves your anxieties and calms you down, but you're supposed to be calm
during the show. After a long day with you, I need, you know, CBD gummies to calm me down. Thank God I have them.
CBD gummies. Somebody sent me a CBD e-cig, and I tried it. It actually wasn't bad.
I haven't even heard of that.
No. Yeah. I don't know where they got it.
Huh.
Tlaib says, Congresswoman Tlaib, we cannot be a society that justifies the killing of a child. I would agree with that, but what she's talking about is the Kaya case that took place last week. And what happened there is she was about to stab somebody. And she, you know, now the cop has to make a split second decision. And he saved an innocent girl's life in the process. I'll play later. All these viral videos of cops now, they're putting it out there. Hang on, guys, please don't stab each other right now. Hang on, let me call LeBron James. See what he thinks I should do. They're all over the place. 800-941-SHAWN is our number if you want to be a part of the program. This was interesting. A little side note. Clinton's White House apparently, remember, it came out recently that he did fly in the Lolita Express after lying to us saying he never did. And apparently the Clinton White House welcomed Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell as VIP guests, and there are photos of it. That's pretty interesting. Watching that, Clarence Thomas called out his liberal court colleagues for their inconsistent opinions based on and depending on the issues. In other words, they're not being governed by a judicial philosophy, say, of constitutionalism or originalism. They're basing their decisions based on the political moment of the time, which is the exact opposite of the role of the court. Anyway, Liz Cheney apparently is thinking of running for president. I don't think that's going to end up well, Liz. You might want to save your money. Not ruling out running for president. All right, hour two, Sean Hannity Show. Thanks for being with us. Toll free. We'll get your calls in today. Promise 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. A lot of news out there regarding COVID-19. Therapeutic advancement, Regeneron, some of these other monoclonal cocktails, as they call them, and ivermectin and HCQ, which we were told, in this medical journal and that medical journal is dangerous. Yeah, then they retracted them. So much as they've gotten wrong. Let's go back a year ago, March, and the great Dr. Fauci's advice on masks.
Now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
You're sure of it? Because people are listening really closely to this.
Right now, people should not be walking. There's no reason to be walking around with a mask.
That led, of course, to a radical shift and change, and even getting to the point, you know, people being chased around stores and ratted out by the mask police if there was a moment that they didn't have their mask on, or if a 1 or 2 year old was traveling on an airplane, parents getting kicked off if they couldn't keep the mask on the poor kid that's, you know, didn't want to put the mask on. And then it's like one mask, then two masks, and, you know, then recently saying that even if you have been vaccinated, you still got to wear the mask, and you have to wear the mask even outside. You have to wear the mask. I'm like, okay, can we get one clear opinion? Can they get it? Can they get anything in this process right? Because they've screwed up a lot and hasn't particularly been helpful. Now Fauci hinting the CDC may ease restrictions on outdoor masking.
Yeah, you know, Jim, I don't want to come out ahead of a CDC announcement, but as you hinted yourself just now a moment ago, that very soon, imminently, in the next few days, very likely, the CDC will be coming out with updating their guidelines of what people who are vaccinated can do, and even some who are not vaccinated. And certainly what one can do outdoors vis-a-vis masks is going to be one of those recommendations. So stay tuned. It's coming soon.
All right. And if you don't mind, I'll press a little bit. I know you don't want to get ahead of these guidelines, but I assume airports, travel, that sort of thing, that'll be coming up as well.
Well, sooner or later, I don't know if it's all going to be coming out at once. I mean, the one thing for sure is the thing that's on a lot of people's minds is what about outdoors? Because obviously a lot of people are going to be spending a lot of time more outdoors now because the weather is getting really nice, beautiful spring weather. You're going to be seeing people wanting to do things outdoors without masks. And it's common sense to know that the risk when you are outdoors, which we have been saying all along, is extremely low.
A flip, the flop, the flail, it's everywhere. Now there's an MIT, we have some researchers there. They found that the widely used 6-foot rules, 6 feet apart indoors, does almost nothing to stop the spread of COVID-19, according to this MIT study. Fully open Texas and Florida. Yeah, how is it that kids have been in school in Florida since last August? New York City public schools kids, 582,000 students still are not experiencing any inside education. It's all over Zoom schooling and homeschooling, etc. Dana White lashed out at the mob and the media for calling, you know, the event. If you missed the fights this weekend, whoa. That was crazy. Anyway, we'll get to that later. Saying to basically go blank yourself. But they can't seem to get anything right. And the now the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is back online with the warning about potential blood clotting for women 18 to 48 after the six. I think it might be up to 8 cases now where they had one mortality. Oscar attendees not wearing their masks, not that anyone was watching anyway. They lost over 50% of their ratings from last year's disaster. And, you know, to me, it's, you know, as I've been really trying to tell people on this program that I'm not a doctor, but we've been sharing important health information regularly, including some conflicting information, because the science and the scientists and the great Dr. Fauci keep changing their minds every other day. But as far as I'm concerned, I want you to study on your own. I want, you know, we've urged people, okay, once they said wear masks and be careful around older people, those with pre-existing conditions and compromised immune systems, okay, if that's going to save grandma and grandpa, I'm not against it. I'm pro-science in every way. But I urge all of you to seek out as many medical opinions as possible. And so we put people on this program I agree with and some I have some disagreement with. And I urge, you know, I'm not the doctor. I don't know your individual medical conditions. But if you study on your own and you read the science and the medical opinions of as many people as possible regarding therapeutics, the three vaccines available, then consult with your own doctors, people you trust in the medical profession, then make the best informed health decision for you based on your unique medical condition. I'm a firm believer in the right to medical privacy as well. Anyway, Dr. George Farid is back with us, Dr. Brian Tyson. And these are two guys that have been on the front lines of COVID. Welcome, Dr. Farid. Welcome, Dr. Tyson. Dr. Farid, how many people have you treated as it relates to COVID?
Thank you, Sean. Thank you for having me along with Brian Tyson. I've treated over 800 from in our area and then throughout the country, and I continually get contacted by people who can't get early treatment in their local setting, which is really tragic. And it all stems back to the colossal failure to prioritize for early treatment 14 months ago, 13 months ago, and the colossal failure. And I don't know if it's dishonesty or something else, but for Fauci and others not to recognize the efficacy of hydroxychloroquine and certainly now ivermectin, with ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine together being an extraordinarily effective early treatment. And so it's just heartbreaking. I realize 800, that's a good number. I wish I could have treated 8,000. Brian gets great credit for what he's done in his urgent care clinic, which should have been the model, and it still should be around our country, for bringing in patients and getting them on treatment if they're diagnosed. We have to address sick patients now. Masks and vaccines are always secondary, and the sick people come first, and we have to continue to prevent hospitalizations. But our treatment remains very effective for the new variants, the contagious variants. And there's so many stories I could recount, and I know Brian can, of the success and the gratitude that patients have when they recover and they're not in fear.
But I could tell you, Dr. Farid, that in New York, that basically, unless your oxygen goes below 90, you're not getting admitted to a hospital. Most people I know in New York, that they actually get no treatment except, call us if you have a fever and if your oxygen level drops below 90, and then go to a hospital. The pattern has been respiratory problems start kicking in, day 6 and 7? You've been saying that if you started on day 1 of your diagnosis, that you would be much better off.
Oh, absolutely. But even later, it turns it around. We've had many examples where they're into it 10 to 10 days, and they're starting to get respiratory difficulty, and they will benefit from this combination, plus adding in, as Dr. McCullough has described, and I'll let Brian speak because he's been a lifesaver in this area, but you can add in the monoclonals certainly with the oral agents, and then add in the corticosteroids and colchicine and inhaled budesonide, and they will go through a really rapid recovery even later. So that should be hammered home. And the mainstream media, I just talked to someone on the street that was interested in what I was doing, and he said he'd watched CNN, he'd never heard anything of this. He said, oh, you're using remdesivir. And I showed him that absolutely not. We don't want them to have to get remdesivir. But anyway, it's getting too much, Sean, and I... Please, Brian, let me know, or why don't you comment?
All right, Dr. Tyson, you want to add to what Dr. Farid is saying? Thank you for joining us,
Brian. You know, we've seen over 4,800, almost 4,900 positive patients. We have a 100% success rate with anybody who presents with symptoms in the first 5 days. We have a 98% reduction in mortality with anyone who's presented after 5 days. So the treatment definitely works. We've been using it since the day one, like Dr. Farid said, and the success is unwavering. I mean, there's just no doubt in my mind. And then, you know, you talked about the masks, right? These masks and things, and the problems that we're seeing with this. What's interesting is Stanford did a study back in November that got buried, and the link has actually been banned on a lot of the social media sites. They looked at over 400,000 patients retrospectively, and the data, quote, the data suggests that both medical and non-medical face masks are ineffective to block human-to-human transmission of viral and infectious diseases such as SARS-CoV-2, supporting against the uses of face masks. That's published on the NIH.gov website, but they've buried the link so that you can't share it on social media. It's one of the biggest lies that we've seen across America. Like you said, it's a flip-flop, and it's not about science anymore. It's about control.
And as we continue, Dr. George Fareed and Dr. Brian Tyson are with us. I've heard from more than a number of doctors that Regeneron in particular has been tremendously effective at helping people that have maybe had some of the more or most severe symptoms. Dramatic stories of turnaround, including Dr. Benjamin Carson. And we know it worked on President Trump. And I know other people that have had it as well. And have you found the same results? Dr. Tyson, I'll ask you first.
Yeah, so we use a combination, and this is where the whole there's no outpatient treatment for COVID. I just can't believe it, because Regeneron is an outpatient treatment. We've given it to our high-risk patients, diabetes, morbid obesity, anyone over the age of 55. If you've got two or more comorbidities, you qualify for Regeneron. We send them to the hospital, they get their treatment, and then we also put them on our triple cocktail. And we've seen dramatic turns around in 2 to 3 days. People with oxygen saturations as low as 90% have turned around to 98% within 24 hours. It's being completely disregarded in replacement of these quote so-called vaccines. And what's interesting that we've seen in our clinic recently, and I can tell you that Dr. Peter McCullough has verified this as well, is the new cases, we're seeing more new cases of COVID post-vaccine than we are seeing people who have not been vaccinated getting COVID. What seems to be the issue is the COVID vaccine seems to drop the people's immune system, and during that 2 to 3 week period, they're being more susceptible to actually getting the infection. And those are the patients who are testing positive. We're seeing probably 40 to 50% of our COVID patients have already had either one or two doses of their vaccines.
Wow. It's mind-numbing to me. Dr. Fareed, you want to add to that?
Well, yeah, I would just say that the monoclonal antibodies are a tremendous add-on to the outpatient therapy, as Brian has stated. The combination with the ivermectin HCQ oral treatments makes it a 100% success, but they're very underutilized. The government paid these companies, Lilly and Regeneron, $800 million or more, and they make the treatment available free. Patients pay for the infusion cost, but regardless, 75% are not used around the country. So people are, that I get contacted, they're not easily accessing it, and so they go on our protocol, and they do very well. But it's also a issue of the dispensing of this of these monoclonal antibodies, or the access that hasn't been set up really suitably, in my opinion.
But the fact that we have all of this, with the track record that you both are describing, and there's very little discussion about it. I'm not saying people have to do it, but at least I can tell you from my own experience that when I hear people have it, and then I mention these options that both of you have been using, they've never heard of it. Let me ask you one last question on the other side of this break.
Right.
If you can stay with us just a minute longer, and it's more about kids, and then we'll get to everybody's calls. 800-941-SHAWN is our number if you want to be a part of the program. The tanking of the Oscars, the Academy Awards. It's unbelievable. We'll get to that. Joe Concha and Louis Gohmert and your calls, 800-941-SHAWN, as we continue. All right, 25 to the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. One last question. I wanted to get this in with Dr. George Fareed, Dr. Brian Tyson. These guys have both been on the front lines of COVID. Dr. Fauci is not. They're out there. They're dealing with real patients every day in the case of, 5,000 between them, over 5,000 people. And they come up with early treatment protocols that many, many states are not using at all. And you can see the difference in a state like Florida and Texas and then compare it to New York, New Jersey, California, Michigan. Michigan's an unmitigated disaster with these variants now. And, you know, and of course, a governor that says, do what I say, not what I do, and travels to Florida, and her husband's taking his boat out. But that's a separate issue for a second day. This video has gone viral. Now, for example, in Florida, kids have been in school since last August. In New York City, there's still over nearly 600,000 that have never been to school. This Georgia mom, frustrated, blasting the school board in this one particular case for the fact that their kids that have not had the problems of older people or people with pre-existing conditions or compromised immune systems or comorbidities, and blasting them, these kids, and stuck in masks all day, and the impact it's having on them. Listen.
Every month I come here and I hear the same thing: social emotional health. If you truly mean that, you would end the mask requirement tonight. But it's April 15th, 2021, and it's time. Take these masks off of my child. And I know what I'm going to be met with. But Ms. Taylor, the CDC, we did not vote for people at the CDC. We did elect leaders who do create policy. We elected the five of you. We chose you to make difficult decisions for our children. We chose you to make decisions that would be in our children's best interest, enforcing 5-, 6-, 7-, 8-, and 9-year-old little children to cover their noses and their mouths where they breathe for 7 hours a day, every day for the last 9 months for a virus that you know doesn't affect them. That is not in their best interest. And this has to stop. Defend our children. My 6-year-old can't come up here and say this. It has to stop. Take these off of our children.
We continue. Dr. George Fareed, Dr. Brian Tyson. Dr. Tyson, why don't we give you a first crack at that? Young people, although there was a story this weekend about one of these variants emerging that is impacting people in their 30s, not young kids in school. And I'm wondering if you're concerned about the age difference, the shift that we had not really been seeing in real numbers up until just recently with the variant.
Yeah, so a couple of things. I mean, you know, number one, I have small kids at home as well. And my 6-year-old had COVID-19. He had symptoms for about 12 hours, and that's about all. So the first thing we do know is masking children is not healthy, both for their physical health and both for their emotional health. Dr. Mark McDonald, who's a adolescent psychiatrist that I spent the weekend over this past with, he's got great arguments on how the emotional distress that this is creating amongst kids who look for facial recognition, they look for reassurance from mom and dad and from those around them, that what they're doing is correct versus what they're not doing being correct. And with no facial expressions, they're not understanding what is good behavior and what's bad behavior. So that's on the emotional side. On the physical side, these masks are acting like fomites. It's no different than the doctor who wore his white coat around rounds and never washed it. These kids don't wash their masks all day long. They're in them. They get moisture. They get dirt. They get bacteria. And they're expected to wear them for 6 to 8 hours a day. What we're seeing in our clinic is an increase in strep cases with these kids. We're seeing increases in bacterial pneumonia in these kids. And we're not seeing any reduction or any really infection of COVID-19. Believe it or not, most of these kids who are getting sick right now are getting coronavirus NL63, which is just a normal variant of the common cold. So I hear variants with coronavirus, and I've always questioned, is it a variant of coronavirus 19, or is it a variant of the 7 other coronaviruses that we see every day? We're also seeing E. coli peaks in the young kids as well. And I believe that has to do with a fecal-oral transmission because they're wearing these masks all day long, every day.
Your last thought, Dr. Fareed, we'll give you the last word today.
Well, that's well stated by Brian, and that's exactly my feeling. I agree with the lady's speech in Georgia fully, and that what we need to do is focus on early treatment, getting these sick younger people on the treatment. It's very effective against the variants.
We want to prevent the long COVID syndrome. We want to treat, knock that virus out. And that's what Fauci missed. And I'll never forgive him for that. And I'll never forgive that task force for what they inflicted on the world, actually, and not just the United States. But we still have to battle. We have 500,000 or more deaths that shouldn't have happened, and we're getting more. And so we can treat young kids if they become very symptomatic. The medicines are very safe for them. And the masks and vaccines are secondary.
Well, I really appreciate you both being with us, and I urge everybody to read a wide variety of opinions and get the best of people. I personally love the people that are on the front lines actually dealing with it. I don't like when I hear from people and they tell me, yeah, they said if it gets bad, then call me. You know, you don't get admitted to the hospital until your oxygen level, until you're in deep distress. And I think that a lot of the therapeutics have been underutilized, starting with Regeneron, monoclonal cocktails, and ivermectin, and all these other things that both of you have mentioned. We appreciate you both being with us, though. Dr. Fareed, thank you. Dr. Tyson, thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it.
All right, 800-941-SEAN, our number. All right, we're going to go to Sandy's in Nevada. Hey, Sandy, how are you? Glad you called.
Oh, thanks, Sean. I just so appreciate you taking my call. I love that you've been staying up on the latest and bringing, you know, doctors that are on the forefront and encouraging us to study, which is what I've done since I had COVID about 8 months ago. And I have a doctor that I've consulted with. Well, he's my doctor. I see him. And he agrees that for me, it would not be good to get the vaccine. And so I loved the last time Dr. Fareed and Dr. Tyson were on your call or on your show. They recommended for people that had, I think it was Dr. Fareed in particular, that had already survived COVID, that their immune system is the best defense. And already having gone through it, and I've read studies about this, that our T cells are different. They're trained to be able to attack even a variant of COVID. And so I do not want to get the shot, the experimental shot, yet I wanted to know from them what they're recommending to their patients who may be, like I have been, harassed to get the shot and even threatened. I mean, the threat is the passport and that I may not be able to travel and my life may be over as I know.
Well, I worry about medical privacy like you do. Well, I can tell you this. Probably both these doctors are going to kill me for saying this, but I do know that they are taking calls from people all over the country if you want to, you know, consult with them. Mm-hmm. And I do urge people to you're absolutely right. For example, if you recently had COVID, it's very high likelihood that your antibody count level is going to be very high. And over time, that will begin to decline and maybe even be negligible. But the T cell antibody memory mm-hmm. remains, as I understand it. I'm speaking in layman terms here. I'm not a doctor, but and I've talked to a lot of people. Like, you're right, we discussed that with Dr. Fareed in a previous point. The saddest thing about all of this, listening to them, to me, is what Dr. Oz said when we were having him on regularly, and that is when politics and medicine intersect, politics always wins. And we've seen that. You can't even bring up, okay, well, this is a possible answer. This is a possible answer. This is a possible answer. You know, it's not that you fight with the army you wish you had during a pandemic. You fight with mm-hmm. the army that you do have. And there was mm-hmm. such an unwillingness, you know, the number one premier expert on hydroxychloroquine, for example, Dr. Daniel Wallace, I mean, who's been peer-reviewed 250 papers or so, number one guy on rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and he's anti-malarial drugs, said the risk is nil. Okay, when the top guy that's been dispensing something for 40 years without a single complication to thousands and thousands and thousands of people, you know, at that point, what have you got to lose? To me, in my point of view, and nobody wanted to hear it. And then the two studies that went out in these medical journals were very harmful. They had to be rescinded. I mean, these are prestigious medical journals that had to pull back these early phony studies from people that had a political agenda. It's sad. But you know what? But you know, these doctors I do know spend time and they take calls from people around the country and they've helped a lot of different people, even people that I know. And I think that, yes, I think hearing a variety of medical opinions and making what a personal medical choice based on your very unique medical condition has got to be based on knowledge and medical consultation. I'm not a doctor. I can't tell everybody what to do here. I could. I mean, it seems like everybody wants to know, well, what's Hannity's opinion on this? I'm not Dr. Hannity. I mean, we used to do a segment called Dr. Hannity about relationships, but I'm not a doctor. But we seek out on this program a variety of viewpoints so that you can make your own informed decision. And, you know, it's amazing I get criticized for it. But sounds like you're on the right track, Sandy, okay?
Thanks, Dr. Sean. And something that Dr. Tyson said that I really appreciated was that the drop in immune system, immune function after the vaccine is what they're seeing, and people then subsequently getting COVID who might not have had they not had the vaccine. That I think that's what I'm concerned about for me, is that it will drop my immune system so that that T cell function that I am so excited that I have now, I may not have, and it may make me more susceptible.
What I like about what I'm hearing from you is you've read a lot and it's obvious. Keep reading. Keep talking to professionals. Get a variety of views and then make your informed decision based on your consultation with your doctor, based on your unique medical condition. Okay.
Okay. Thanks so much, Sean.
That's the best advice I can give. I'm trying to be responsible here. I don't want to lose one person in this audience ever. And this is a smart audience that listens to talk radio. All right, back to our busy telephones. Russ is in New York. What's up, Russ? How are you, sir?
Good afternoon, Sean, and thank you so much for taking my call. I appreciate everything that you do for America.
Thank you. What's going on?
I was curious, with all the nonsense from our current administration, Sleepy Joe and Chameleon Harris, whether the Biden corruption and Hunter Biden laptop situation has gone to a complete stop, and anything new with John Durham, who was, you know, entrusted to do the right thing for this country, and we don't hear a peep.
I sadly now, at this point in my life, have had to conclude something I never thought I'd have to say, is that we don't have an equal justice under the law, equal application of our laws.
That's what it seems.
And the short answer is that I've been briefed by people who have currently the Hunter Biden laptop. I've been briefed on it. If it were anybody with the last name Trump, all of the things that have not been disclosed publicly would be disclosed.
Right.
And the double standard. Same with Durham. I don't know what Durham is doing. But we do know that even the Inspector General report on Horowitz talked about, there were numerous referrals in that Inspector General's report. We now know that Comey, Yates, and even Rod Rosenstein, others, knowing what we know now, know we never would have signed the FISA warrant. Now we know that they knew very early that Steele even told them themselves, that they heard it directly from him, that it wasn't verified. But they continued to use it as the bulk of information to spy on a president. Sad. I don't know what else to tell you. You know, if you're a conservative, spit on the sidewalk, jaywalk, arrested, 20 years in jail. You're a liberal, you get away with everything. Appreciate the call. 800-941-SEAN.
Stay right here for our final news roundup and information overload.
All right, news roundup and information overload hour. 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. So I did not watch any of the Oscars last night. And looking at the aftermath, it's an unmitigated disaster. I mean, they literally went from 2020 an 18.1 share, 33 in the demo, to 8.9. I mean, that is a disaster. Now, there was last week a producer of last year's Oscars speaking on the condition of anonymity, telling the New York Times that minute-by-minute ratings post-show, their analysis on ratings indicated that vast numbers of people were turning off their television whenever these celebrities began opining on politics. Well, from what I hear and all that I've read, apparently that is happened last night. There was actually a list on Breitbart of the 11 woke rants at the Oscars. And, yeah, I listen, you know what? I just don't have any interest in these people. I don't care what they say. I don't care what their opinions are. I have no interest at all what they have to say. Another thing, if you're paying attention to social media, it'll be interesting to see how the big tech companies respond to this. But they're what appears to be real cops dressed is in squad cars that they are making these fake calls and these videos. There's so many of them that have been sent to me over the weekend. I'll play one of them for you where it actually they act like, oh, there's about to be a stabbing and they're calling LeBron James for advice, considering what he did last week. Listen to one of these 17.
Dispatch, I've arrived at that disturbance. Will you have LeBron call my cell phone right away, please? Thank you.
Excuse me, sir. Excuse me. No, can you put the knife down, please, sir? Sir, no, 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 sir, don't stab it. No, no, stop stabbing. Stop. Oh, hold on. Hold on. It's LeBron. LeBron. Hey, yeah, it's me again. Listen, I'm out here at this disturbance call, and there's a guy trying to stab another guy with a knife. What do you think I should do? Why does that matter? Okay, well, they're both black. One guy's trying to stab another guy with a knife. Deadly force is completely justified. Uh-huh. I see. So you don't care if a black person kills another black person, but you do care if a white cop kills a black person, even if he's doing it to save the life of another black person? I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but then again, you are really good at basketball, so I guess I'll take your word for it. All right. Yep. Okay. All right. Thanks, LeBron. Michael Jordan's the GOAT. What? Nothing. I gotta go. Sorry, guys. You're on your own. Good luck.
I mean, it's sad because this cop last week in Ohio saved the life of an innocent girl that was unarmed, pinned to a car as a knife was about to be thrust into her by the assailant. And of course, then LeBron James made his comments. Anyway, joining us now is Joe Concha to talk about, well, first, all things media mob and big tech. And we appreciate you being back with us, Joe Concha. Pretty amazing to me, the Oscars, 58% decline. That is, you don't see that kind of decline.
You want to hear some numbers, John. You know, I love my numbers. And when you look back, just 1998, okay, not too long ago, cable era, obviously, and 57 million people tuned in to that broadcast. That's when they had an actual host in Billy Crystal, right? And Titanic was a big movie that year. Even 7 years ago, in 2014, 40 million people tuned in. Last night, they couldn't even get 10 million people to tune in. So think about that. 47 million people gone, didn't watch compared to 98. 30 million gone compared to just 7 years ago when there were all these options in terms of all the cable channels and streaming and so on. So think about that for a moment. That's how much this is getting rejected, because this was a steaming pile of a hot mess and a dumpster fire. It wasn't funny. It was humorless. Most of the country is predispositioned that they're going to be lectured to, so they don't even bother tuning in the first place. And then they couldn't even organize it right. When they give out Best Actor to the great Anthony Hopkins, he's not even there to give a speech. So nothing went right, and they got what they deserved in terms of this horrible, horrible audience that this used to be the most watched show after the Super Bowl. Now it couldn't even get 10 million people. It's just comical at this point, except there was nothing comical about last night. It was sad, pious, and depressing.
You know, it is unbelievable. This is an unmitigated disaster. I wonder if the golden era of Hollywood now has finally come to an end, if all of these varying platforms combined have now watered down the effect of, you know, creating the big Hollywood star, you know, the Tom Cruise, you know, go back to the old days, the Jimmy Stewart or Mary, you know, those days. And Cary Grant and all these great actors and actresses. I wonder if that era is now completely over, because you got Netflix, you got Prime, Amazon, you got Hulu, you've got, you know, on demand everything. So I'm just wondering, you think this is the end? I mean, for example, I'm watching a series now called Kingdom because I'm into mixed martial arts. And by the way, did you watch this weekend's fights?
No, I didn't get to see him, unfortunately. I actually had like a date night with my wife, which is something we haven't done in a while. So I was actually out at a restaurant. It was incredible. But how was it?
Chris Weidman, I'll probably show the video. So he makes a kick on his opponent. And interestingly, this had happened to him years ago. But anyway, he snapped in two his tib and fib. And it just, it's so brutal to watch, man. And these are kicks that I practice every day. It's funny. But, I mean, it's not funny. It's, like, harsh. It's, like, the humanity side of it is just awful.
Yeah, I think we've stumbled onto a good analogy here when you say, you know, do you think it's dead now for big Hollywood? Will they ever have that big glamorous night again when 30, 40, 50 million people are tuning in? No, and you made me think it's kind of like heavyweight boxing, right, where you would have a heavyweight fight and you stopped everything that you're doing, right? When I was growing up, it was more like, you know, Tyson, Holyfield, or if you want to go back to, you know, more my dad's era, Ali or Frazier. And now you think, wow, when was the last time I even watched a heavyweight fight? And I think that's kind of like Hollywood now at this point. It's lost its appointment viewing aspect because, again, the movies are just so politically correct and they have to have diversity. And if they don't have diversity in it, they won't even get nominated. When it just was, give me a good movie. I don't care who's in it, black, white, Asian. You give me a great movie, I'll watch it, and I'm not thinking about quotas. And I think people are now rejecting it because the movies are trying to be too cute by half by doing all these types of films that are politically correct instead of compelling.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty unbelievable. Where do you think this ultimately ends up here? I mean, are we going to have the release of movies now on demand and a movie theater is going to be a thing of the past? Look, when I was young growing up, I'm a little older than you, Joe Concha, but I mean, my family used to go to drive-in movie theaters. I loved it. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. You know, you pack the car, you put on the little speaker inside the car, and you watch the movie as a family. Usually I fell asleep, but those days are pretty much gone. There's a couple of drive-in theaters that remain more of a novelty than anything else. Do you think movie theaters now are going to be a thing of the past and everything's going to be released and you can just watch it at home?
I think it's a lot like what we see in sports and attendance dropping a bit. Obviously, I'm not talking about, you know, pandemic year, but let's go like back to 2019, where people are like, you know what? I could spend hundreds of dollars to sit in traffic and go to a game and it's a nice experience. But maybe I don't want season tickets where I do that every night because at home, I have this immersive experience now. I was looking at, I'm getting my basement redone. I had a flood. It's a very long story, but I was looking at TVs and I'm like, what's a 65-inch TV go for these days? I was finding TVs at 65 inches. I don't know.
No, they're very inexpensive. I'm stupid enough, I buy them when they first come out. Then they go down, they drop in price by 80%.
One keyword, refurb. So I always go for the refurb. I don't care if it's like a little bit used or whatever, that's fine. But the point is that I have that movie theater experience with sports or with movies now at home. I know it's not a big, big screen, but I got surround sound. And if you're watching something on a 65, 75, 85-inch screen in your living room, then wow, that's a lot cheaper. It's a lot more convenient. You get a lot of your life back and not having.
No, I've got an 85-incher in my house, and I'm going to go to 100 now. I mean, I love it. What did you think? I couldn't believe when I read this. The Oscars, they have a $205,000 gift bag, you know, swag as they call it, including a liposuction, a spa retreat, three-night trip to a secluded Swedish island. And by the way, I didn't see the mask wearing so much last night. Did you?
No. I saw interviews where people were like 2 inches from each other, you know, and then I turn on CNN and I see the vice president and Kamala Harris getting interviewed by Dana Bash, and they're like 15 feet apart, even though they're both vaccinated.
No, my favorite was is that Joe Biden doing the Zoom call with world leaders, and he's the only one. He's in his own office. He's alone. Unless he brought people in to write him notes to how to respond. Which probably is a distinct possibility, or if he even knew what day it was, somebody was there to remind him. But he's the only world leader wearing the mask on a Zoom call.
That's the thing. And even you say, well, maybe there are people around and weren't vaccinated. You think there's anybody near the president of the United States that hasn't been vaccinated at this point? I mean, more than half the country already has been. But yeah, if you work there, I'm pretty sure you're prioritized in terms of getting this vaccine.
When I went to interview the president, then President Trump, I needed a picture ID first to get into the White House or to get into whatever the event, wherever we were doing the interview. That was number one. Number two, first thing before you can even get around the president, you got your rapid COVID test.
Right. And that's the thing. I think this administration knows that COVID helped them win the White House. If there's no pandemic, that Donald Trump wins quite easily because you had a roaring economy and we're at peace, right? When you have those two things going for you and you have a candidate as inept as Biden was, yeah, he was going to win quite easily. But now they know that COVID is kind of like their lifeline. Like, this helped us get in, and we got to have this thing go on as long as possible. So he's wearing it on Zoom calls. Or Kamala Harris is saying, I'd go to Guatemala and Honduras and Mexico, but I can't right now because of COVID restrictions. Well, wait a minute. How does that work? You're fully vaccinated. Your staff is fully vaccinated, and you're using COVID now as an excuse not to fix a problem at the border when you know that's no excuse whatsoever. Yet she traveled to something like, what, 10 states in the past month? But you can't go to Texas because of COVID. So it's convenient. It's an excuse for this administration, and they'll wear that mask. You saw the president, National Secretary at Arlington, and he's wearing a mask, and there's not anybody within 1,000 feet of him. And he knows those pictures are going to go all over the country. And people are probably wondering, wait, if you took the vaccine, then why are you masked outside alone? That actually is what leads to vaccine hesitancy. So this administration obviously is milking this for all they can, but I think people are fed up with it now. I think they're starting to see what a ruse the whole mask-wearing thing after your vaccine.
One of the things that I think athletes have missed about sports and bringing politics into the NFL or the NBA or MLB like they did in ripping unfairly away the All-Star game from Georgia, when in fact it is far more restrictive in terms of voting laws in Joe's Delaware, where he has represented the state of Delaware 595 years and never once lifted a finger to make it less restrictive. So much easier and convenient for everybody in Georgia to vote than in Delaware. But when athletes get involved politically, I don't care if it's Kaepernick taking a knee or the comments last week of LeBron James, the one thing, if you attend sporting events as I have throughout my life, and I love them less now because of politics being injected into sports, and you have people of all backgrounds, all races, coming together, and there's a bond there. They're all fans of the same team, and there's a natural, there's a moment where people are together, and they're not asking people what their politics are. And I find when I go to sports, I go there for entertainment from the Latin to be distracted. I want to be distracted. If I wanted politics, I wouldn't be at the ball game. And I do believe that the net effect of this is they're going to alienate more and more people. And I'm not talking about an organized boycott, but I'm far less interested in sports now as a result of all the politics brought into it.
That's the thing. I mean, I live in New Jersey. It's a blue state, and my friends are all over the political spectrum, right? And the ones that don't get along with me in terms of my perspective on XYZ politically, we just don't talk about it, but we'll talk about sports. That's always the commonality. And I might be looking across the table at this one individual who I know is far left of Bernie Sanders, but we can talk about fantasy football and not miss a beat. So yes, the escapism that we keep losing everywhere, not just with sports, but look at late night comedy, if you want to call it that these days, right? I hear Seth Meyers and Stephen Colbert arguing why we need to blow up the filibuster. I'm like, oh, wow, this is like Dean Martin. This is Carson. This is hilarious. I totally get it. No, I don't, actually. If I want to obsess about race and talk about politics, I'll watch CNN. But I'm not going to do that either, obviously. So, yeah, that's we've lost escapism everywhere. Late-night comedy, sports, you name it. We can't escape it anymore. Woke is everywhere. But when you go woke, you go broke. Done.
All right, Joe Concha, thanks so much for being with us. Fox News contributor, media columnist for The Hill, 800-941-SEAN, our number. We'll get to your calls when we come back. I-25 to the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. If you want to be a part of the program, I went through this last week on the program. It doesn't matter what the issue is. Georgia's voting law, far more inclusive than the state of Delaware. 17 days you have early in-person voting. Delaware, Joe's state of that he's represented 598 years, you get zero. Drop boxes every precinct in Georgia. In Delaware, zero. You need to give an excuse to even get an absentee ballot. Not the case in Georgia. Both states require voter ID. But if you oppose that, if you oppose the Green New Deal, if you oppose court packing, if you oppose ending the legislative filibuster, if you oppose D.C. statehood, it's all racist. This has now gone way beyond every 2 years, 4 years, typical Democratic election year playbook. Republicans are racist, sexist, misogynist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, now transphobic. They want dirty air and water, and some Republican wants to take grandma, grandpa in a wheelchair, feed them dog food, cat food, and then throw them over a cliff. Listen to Mondaire Jones calling Republicans racist if they oppose D.C. statehood.
I have had enough of my colleagues' racist insinuations that somehow the people of Washington, D.C. are incapable or even unworthy of our democracy. One Senate Republican said that D.C. wouldn't be a, quote, well-rounded working-class state. I had no idea there were so many syllables in the word white. One of my House Republican colleagues said that D.C. shouldn't be a state because the district doesn't have a landfill. My goodness, with all the racist trash my colleagues have brought to this debate, I can see why they're worried about having a place to put it.
Wow. Then you have Nancy Pelosi. Listen to her talking about passage of D.C. statehood. Now, very different situation in the Senate, but this is what she said.
I rise as Speaker of the House to join my colleagues on this momentous day for American democracy as we right an historic injustice by passing legislation to finally grant Washington, D.C. statehood. Statehood for the District of Columbia is about showing respect for our democracy, for the American people, and for our Constitution. That Constitution begins with our preamble, "We the People," setting out our founders' vision of a government of, by, and for the people.
Of, by, and for the people. Here to give a quick response is our friend Congressman Louie Gohmert of the great state of Texas. Louie recently, by the way, lost his dad, who he loved very much. And sorry about your pain, my friend. I know at the end of March, March 31st, that was 25 years ago, I lost my dad. And I never, never a day passes I don't think about him.
Exactly. And that'll be my situation 25 years from now, too. And thank you, Sean. You're a true friend. I appreciate it.
So one of the hardest. It doesn't matter how old you are when you lose a parent. It doesn't matter.
That's true.
It hurts. It hurts like hell.
It does. Yep, you know. It does. He's a good man. I wish that's what we had all over Congress, and that's not the case. Unbelievable the way they toss around the term racist. You know, we were told that if you didn't support D.C. becoming a state, you were not only racist, but you supported taxation without representation. Well, this is nothing about race. It's about the Constitution. It's about also just being an honest federal government. The land came from Virginia and from Maryland for the purpose of creating a federal enclave that would never be part of any state, never be inside a state, never be inside a city. It would be a federal enclave so that no state and no city could ever try to blackmail or extort things out of the Congress or the White House. And these people have just completely rewritten history. This is about preserving the Constitution. And if they were going to make D.C. into a state, you first have to cede it back to Maryland and then ask Maryland if they're okay with carving that state out. And then we deal with it from there. But let me tell you, the people that believe in taxation without representation are the Democrats. And when I first got to D.C. and I saw on the license plate taxation without representation, I'm going, really, what's this? And then I find out there is no federal territory, Puerto Rico, Guam, all of our territories do not pay a dime of federal income tax because they don't elect a full voting representative, which is D.C.'s case. D.C. is being treated unfairly, and the solution is either have a constitutional amendment to make them a state or a constitutional amendment to give them a representative, which was tried in 1978 unsuccessfully, or you pass the bill I've been trying to get a Democrat to sign on to, none will, that ends federal income tax for D.C. residents. That is the fair thing to do. Got a bunch of Republicans supporting, but Eleanor Holmes Norton will not support ending taxation for our constituents, nor will Pelosi or Cindy Hoyer. So it's really pretty lame, the accusations they're throwing at us.
You know, it's pretty unbelievable. Okay, but we're very close. For the Republicans have a great shot in 2022 at taking back the House. I think you'd agree. And if you want, I guess, yes. If we all want a bellwether of what the next election, presidential election, is going to look like in 2024, we can look at the Senate. Not only the House, if Republicans were to take back the House, there is, you know, now we're seeing, for example, that there's a very strong possibility that there's going to be a lot of redistricting, a lot of seats picked up by states like Florida and Texas, seats lost in California, seats lost in states like New York and elsewhere. That's going to be interesting to watch. But then you've got in the Senate, Florida, you got North Carolina, Georgia, New Hampshire, you've got Ohio, you got Wisconsin, you got Arizona. I mean, these are big Senate races that we're going to have in 2022.
You're right. And in that regard, if the Democrats were successful in what I believe with all my heart is unconstitutional, making D.C. a state in the method they are trying, then for the first time, I would have to entertain what many Texans have talked about for over 100 years. And that goes back to the joint resolution that brought Texas in as a state. It said that in Texas, basically, Texas sole discretion, it could divide up into as many as five different states. Sean, it may be time to go back and look at actually doing that if they're going to gerrymander the country by creating new states that were never intended to be such.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to wait. I read that the state of Texas, in your constitution, is this true? That Texas would have the right to break into five separate states. They've maintained that right. Is that true?
That's exactly right. It's a matter. Well, but Congress. Okay,
I'm not suggesting that happen. But I mean, that's a fascinating.
If
the Democrats, you know, go nuclear and they try and get four Senate seats that they believe will be Democratic in perpetuity, that might be a way for Republicans to keep, I don't know, some balance in the U.S. Senate.
And it absolutely would be constitutional. It was part of the effort that brought Texas into the Union. It's in the federal law. It's part of the state law. And they could divide up, Texas could divide up into as many as five. It could be less. It could be up to five. And, you know, create a five different states that might end up being having eight Republican senators and two Democrat senators.
Fascinating. All right. Well, listen, we're sorry again about your dad. I'd love to just stay in the United States of America and follow the Constitution and not the power grab, you know, the court packing, D.C., Puerto Rico statehood, ending the legislative filibuster and all the other, you know, using executive orders and reconciliation, bypassing a co-equal branch of government. I'd prefer we actually do it the old-fashioned and constitutional way, Louis, but thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Love talking to you, my friend. Thank you.
All right, my friend. Thank you. Hang in there. Chad in Texas. What's up, Chad? How are you?
Hey, Sean from Long Island, New York. I'm one of your listeners on the radio. It's good to talk to you on the radio.
Good to talk to you, but that's Linda more than me.
Right. It's good to talk to you. Okay.
Boss. That's what she says. Boss.
Boss. Okay. Glad I got to have that icebreaker with you to start off this Monday. But, you know, because of unfortunate situations or not situation, but things that have happened, some shootings, some police involvement, what have you, all of this has seems to have taken a little bit of a light on the whole debacle of Andrew Cuomo's whole situation shift show, as you would say, on both his sexual harassment allegations and also the nursing home. The reason why I say this is such a huge deal, and it seems that because of big unfortunate circumstances has taken a little bit of a lesser toll or not much in the news. Do you know anything like the latest, if there's any more? Because he definitely does not need to get a pass.
Look, I mean, I'm just being very frank here, and I said it earlier in the program. If you're a conservative and you spit on the sidewalk or you jaywalk, you're probably going to end up going to jail for 20 years of your life. If you're a Democrat, even if the inspector general finds reason that, in fact, there should be a referral for lying to Congress, well, Roger Stone got 20 guys in tactical gear, frogmen, guns drawn, pre-dawn raid, CNN cameras. What was the charge? Lying to Congress. And they want to put Manafort, Roger Stone, and Papadopoulos and all these guys away for the rest of their lives so they'd all die in prison. I mean, it's unbelievable. And nothing happens. There's this massive double standard. So if that holds true in New York, yeah, Cuomo's going to get a pass. Will he get reelected? I have no idea. He's already been elected three times. His popularity is, you know, he's way underwater now. But it wouldn't shock me if the state of New York voted for this guy again. Wouldn't shock me one bit.
Right. It's going to be a real slap in the face to the Me Too movement. And Democrats are supposed to be a champion for women. But enough about that. Speaking of Texas, you just spoke to Louie Gohmert. I'm in Texas. And, Sean, I know when you get to a later stage in your life, you want to have a ranch. Well, best of my knowledge, you have a pretty good relationship with our former governor, Rick Perry. Now,
I have a great relationship with him. I like him a lot. He made me an honorary Texan once.
Exactly. He's a fellow Texas Aggie like me, and he could put you in. He has connections. I'm just letting you know, because if you have a toss-up between a ranch in Montana, a ranch in Texas, or no ranch but live in Florida. So you have options galore. Sean Hannity, you're my favorite, along with Trump and some notable others. We would love you down here in Texas. But if you
I tell you this, I got to get out of here. It's they're going to raise New York State's tax to 15% income tax. And I can't, you know, at this point, and the incompetence is beyond, you can't even begin to comprehend it. Florida has, and Texas both have, better infrastructure, and they spend less than half of what the state of New York spends. The infrastructure in New York is it's dilapidated and falling down, and just it's a disgrace. Waste, fraud, abuse, corruption in Albany. It's disgraceful. I've never seen anything like it. And yet there's so now they're moving towards legalizing weed. You know, great. Now we're pushing drugs on people. That's all we need. We need a stone public in New York, although, to be honest, you can't walk down the street of New York City and not smell that crap. It smells like a skunk. And it just is a whole different, there's a whole different world, and I've lived in it. I was out of New York 16 years. That's why my accent is not as bad as Linda's. I worked hard at, it really kicks in when I get tired. And, but, you know, it's just sad what they're doing to the people in New York. And now people are voting and they're leaving with their feet. They're done. They want to get out. So many Americans are fleeing blue states. It's now going to change the electoral map. This was on FoxNews.com. You know, the biggest winners are going to be Florida and Texas. 2-3 seats, new congressional seats, respectively. The state, New York, California. No, they're not getting any of that. Anyway, appreciate the call. Thanks so much, my friend. 800, thank you for the warm invitation, too. It means a lot. All right, that's going to wrap things up for today. Hannity, 9 Eastern tonight, Fox News. Hope you'll join us. Set your DVR. We'll be checking in. I love Senator John Kennedy's a trip. Love having him. Dana Loesch, Pete Hegseth, Newt Gingrich. Representative Byron Donalds is going to join us. Leo 2.0, Kayleigh McEnany, Larry Elder. Set your DVR. Hannity, news you won't get from the mob, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Thanks for being with us. See you tonight, back here tomorrow.